have God's word, you know, and it's like our instruction manual for life, and it tells us everything we need to know. But unless we know his word, we're not going to be able to use it when we come to these difficult times in our life when we absolutely need to know. And if I had read the instruction manual, and if I had taken my car off the parking lot someday in the past and said, let's check out this emergency brake and see how it actually works in case we ever need it, then we would not have been so, I was shaking like a leaf, and we wouldn't have been so panicky when we went into the situation. So I think as the end times come along, and you know, we have the manual that tells us everything we need to know, so that when the time, as the time gets closer and as we're dealing with all these things that are happening in our culture and as the enemy is at work, we're not going to be panic-stricken and terrified. We have what we need right beside us. And so that's a real far stretch. But anyway, that was a fun experience I had this weekend. Yeah, I know. We are too. We are too. Yes, your mind goes on the all, what if I have this happen this time and not that time. Okay, I think what we're going to do, Kathy, we're going to listen to lesson 4 today, right?
Yeah.
Okay, that's the one that really is the meaty one. We have two lessons to tie together today, and so we're going to try to do this in a way. Wayne covers a whole lot of lesson 4 in his discussion, so sometimes it's like we go over it twice. So we're going to leave a lot of the detail-y stuff about the kingdoms and all that to him. But I've been thinking a lot about this, as you know, we all do, you know, in our minds, you know, chew over the word, and we think about what we're learning and what we need to know. And of course, a timeline is always the best way to put everything up so we can understand what's going on. So I have a little timeline up there, which you'll recognize, of course, the divisions there. But I guess what I was thinking about is that I've always had the feeling, as I've thought about the end times, I mean, before we started studying Revelation so much, and just in general, in life in general, that, you know, all these things are things that are going to happen someday, and it's going to maybe just, they aren't really going on now, but they're going to happen then. It's going to be something that's going to pop up. The Antichrist is going to be someone who's all of a sudden just going to pop up, and we're all going to go, and everybody's going to think, oh, this is something unusual or different, maybe. But the thing that I've been really convicted of and convinced of is that it's all happening now. You know, it's all now. And when he comes, everything, the groundwork is all being laid. And it's just going to be like the next step. It isn't going to be like something totally new. And I was thinking about, of course, who is behind the Antichrist. We have the Antichrist up here. It's called the Beast, right? It's also Antichrist. And then along with him is the false prophet. But who is behind these guys? Who is the driving force that empowers these? Okay, it's Satan, right? Okay, we had Satan. He is the one behind it all, isn't he? And we see him also as the dragon, don't we? The great dragon from of old. And I think it's important to understand a little bit about him and what he's doing on this world today. So I just did some, and I unfortunately didn't get through all of them, but in Revelation, is it chapter 12, I think, we talk about the woman. Yeah. And we get such great descriptions of the dragon, because we see the dragon, and he is about to devour the child that the woman is going to give birth to. We know who the child is. Who's the child? Okay, it's Christ. It's the Messiah, the one who's going to rule the world with a rod of iron. And so we see the dragon, and then we see there's a war in heaven, isn't there? And who's fighting this war? Okay, we have the good guys, Michael and the angels, and we have the bad guys. Remember the bad guys? Okay, Satan and his angels. And it says that they waged the war, and what does it say in verse 8? I think this is the most encouraging thing in the whole book of Romans. They were not strong enough. So no matter what we think, you know, we look around the world and we see what's going on, and we see the demonic forces at work, and we see, you know, their human allies that are working on their behalf, and all that's going on, all the stuff. But we see in the end that the dragon is not strong enough. He's not strong enough to defeat who?
that.
Yeah, Michael, his angel's the good guy.
He's not strong enough. That's the first thing for me. No, he's not really that strong.
Is he powerful, though?
Yes.
He is, and you don't want to forget that. But he's not strong enough. He will never win. He will never win the war. And we need to fix our eyes on that and remember that no matter how bad it looks, no matter how discouraged we get looking at what's going on, watching the Super Bowl halftime, seeing the demonic things that are happening, and we think, no, you are not strong enough. You will not win. That's just a great thing for us to remember. But it tells us who he is, though. Even though he's not strong enough, in verse 9, who is he?
The devil.
Okay, he's a serpent of old. We've seen him before. Where have we seen him?
In the garden.
Okay, that serpent we saw in the garden. And what did he do there?
Deceived Eve.
Okay, he deceived Eve. And when he deceived Eve and deceived Adam, what did he procure for himself?
This world.
This world. He is now what? Okay, he's the prince of this world. He is the ruler of this world. He really is. He is the ruler of this world. Now, what do we mean by the world?
World system.
Okay, the world system. He is the ruler of this world system. So we think about all that goes on in our world. He is the ruler. He's the man in charge. It all belongs to him because he won it, didn't he? And it says in, I think, John chapter 12, Jesus said, it's time for the ruler of this world to be cast out. He's not going to be here forever, but for now, he is the ruler of this world. He is the prince of the power of the air. Which is interesting when you think of all the radio waves and TV waves and the internet waves, whatever they are, and all that's going on in the airwaves. He is the prince. He is the one who's now at work in the sons of disobedience, isn't he? And he's the one who deceives who? The whole world. He deceives the whole world. He started off as a deceiver, and he is still a deceiver. What does he deceive the whole world about?
The truth. Themselves, him, who he is, who they are, who the world is.
Yeah, if you're not a believer, you are deceived, aren't you? You are deceived into thinking that all the things that we see are as they should be, when he is the one working behind all the scenes and doing all this terrible stuff.
With Eve, and I think with us too, it began with, hath God said.
Hath God said.
It's always challenging God's word.
Yep.
The authority of it.
Well, what does it say in Romans chapter 1? They traded the truth of God for
the lie.
And so the lie goes on into ways we can't even imagine. The whole world is deceived. It says in Corinthians that he has blinded the eyes of unbelievers. They cannot see the light of the glory of Christ. And so the whole world lies in his power in deceit. He is a liar from the beginning. A liar, and he's a murderer, isn't he? He's a murderer from the beginning. So he deceives the whole world. And then in verse 10, it tells us something else about him. What is he also? Okay, he's the accuser of the brethren. It says in, let's see, what does it say? That he accuses them day and night. Oh, there it is in verse 10. He's accuser of the brethren. He accuses them day and night before God. Accuser of the brethren. And we get a picture of that where the curtain is drawn back in the book of Job, don't we? And we see the sons of God coming, presenting themselves before the Lord, and Satan comes along with them, and God asks them, so what you been doing today? You know, where have you been going? What did we know about him? That he prowls around like what? Like a roaring lion, seeking whom he can devour. So God asks him where he's been prowling that day, and he said he's been prowling around looking at this man, Job. And you know, God says, well, you can do this, you can do that. But we see how God sets the limits, but how Satan is the accuser. Well, he serves you now, but you do something to him, and he's going to curse you. And he's allowed to go before God and accuse us. So that's what he does day and night. He accuses the brethren. And I think he also accuses us to to each other, doesn't he? And he does a lot of that too. But he accuses them before God day and night. He was going to be cast down. And it says that when he was thrown down, that heavens were to do what?
Rejoice.
Why? Yeah, because he's not there anymore. Because he's had access to the throne room. He's had access to heaven. And what do we see? We look at him throughout all these other passages that we looked at. What's his personality like? Apparently, if you look at what the beast is going to be like, what the Antichrist is going to be like, what does he do?
Blasphemous.
Okay, he's blasphemous. He's blasphemous. And so I don't think the blasphemy starts in the middle of the tribulation. I think he's been blaspheming God all this time. You know, we see in Daniel, when Daniel has that vision and he sees the one on the throne and the court being held, and then he hears off to the side those blasphemous words. You know, I think that this has been going on and will go on until the end, until he's thrown out. Okay, and then I was thinking too about, you know, where he came from. And as we looked at Isaiah years ago now, and Ezekiel, or sooner than that, we saw in both of those books a little passage about the origins of Satan, so we would know who he was. And the interesting thing to me, which gives us a clue as to how he works in the world today, let's see, is it 14? Yeah, chapter 14 of Isaiah and verse 12, is that in Isaiah, he is talking about the taunt against the king of Babylon. And then in Ezekiel, it's a taunt against the king of Tyre. And so how does Satan work in the world today? We think of being the prince of this world. How does he work? Who does he work through?
Governments,
yes. He works through these governments, people in high places, the kings, the rulers. He works through them. And we know that there are his princes in the heavenly places that kind of rule over all these different countries and whatnot. So he's talking about the king of Babylon, but he's really talking about who is behind the king of Babylon in Isaiah 14. He says, "How you have fallen from heaven, O star of the morning, son of the dawn." Who is he talking about here? Okay, about Satan, about Lucifer, when he was the beautiful angel before he became the demon that he is. "You have been cut down to the earth, you have weakened the nations, and this is why. You have said in your heart, I will ascend to heaven. I will raise my throne above the stars of God. I will sit on the Mount of Assembly in the recesses of the north. I will ascend above the heights of the clouds. I will make myself like the Most High." So he is the one who wanted to raise his throne. He was the most powerful of the angels, the most beautiful of the angels. He had the highest position as the angel that covers. And yet he was not satisfied, was he? He wanted to raise himself up above God. And we're going to see that as we look at the Antichrist. And what does he do? How does he present himself? As God. He exalts himself above every God. And so we see this personality that Satan has is going to be made manifest in an open way when the Antichrist, as his representative, takes his place on the throne of God, or in the temple of God. So we see that started way back before he ever felt that he wanted to be like the Most High. And then in Ezekiel, I wrote it down, 27 or 37? 28, there we go. Okay, Ezekiel 28. And once again, he's talking to the king of Tyre, but he said, this is verse 2, "Because your heart is lifted up, and you have said, I am a god, I sit in the seat of God, in the heart of the seas, yet you are a man, not a god." Okay, that's it. Okay, down to verse 12. That was the king of Tyre. Now, the lament over him. "Thus says the Lord God, you had the seal of perfection, full of wisdom, perfect in beauty. You were in Eden, the garden of God. Every precious stone was your covering, the ruby, the topaz, the diamond, the beryl, the onyx, the jasper, the lapislazuli, the turquoise, the emerald, the gold. The workmanship of your settings and sockets was in you on the day that you were created. They were prepared. You were the anointed cherub who covers, and I placed you there. You were on the holy mountain of God. You walked in the midst of the stones of fire. You were blameless in your ways from the day you were created until unrighteousness was found in you." By the abundance of your trade, you were internally filled with violence and you sinned. Therefore, I have cast you out as profane from the mountain of God, and I have destroyed you, O covering cherub, from the midst of the stones of fire. Your heart was lifted up because of your beauty. You corrupted your wisdom by reason of your splendor. I cast you to the ground. And so we see this one that was created by God to be this beautiful, beautiful creature who was close to him, and yet he was corrupted because of his beauty. So I was thinking about what the Antichrist might be like, and this is using the sanctified imagination, but what kind of a persona do you think he's going to have? Yeah, he comes disguised as the angel of light, and what Satan does, so he's going to be this person who's going to put off, probably he's going to be very handsome, very appealing, very attractive, very right, deceptive, and then he's going to seem like an angel of light, and we know that he will, because what is he going to do to kick off this 70th week of Daniel? Yeah, he's going to make the strong covenant. And how would they be deceived to make a covenant with this man, do you think?
They trust him.
Yeah, they're going to trust him. They're going to trust him. He's going to look good, isn't he? He's going to look like a trustworthy fellow, and they're going to trust him. And we know that he's going to break the covenant. So we see he is the liar. He is the deceiver. He is the one that crawls around seeking who he can devour, and that includes us, as he's looking to devour whatever he can devour. But the encouraging thing we can know from 1 John is that greater is he that is in us than he that is in the world. So no matter what, we are, because of Christ in us, we have more power than he does. So we don't need to fear, but we need to be what? We need to be wise. We need to be aware. We need to have our eyes open and our senses trained by the Word of God to discern evil and to discern the lies and to discern the falsehood. And so, you know, ladies, I can't encourage you enough to stick with the precept studies, to keep studying and to ask God to show you the truth of his word. You know, they used to use the plumb line. The plumb line is the word of God. And everything has to line up to the plumb line. And we know that in the last days, as in 2 Timothy, that they're going to, men are going to come along, and we're going to see the false prophets in 1 John. They're going to come along and they're going to introduce destructive heresies. And the idea is that they're right alongside the truth, aren't they? And so much alongside the truth that what do they look like? They look like truth. Your warning flags might not go up because it's not real obvious. It's very, very subtle. And so we have to know the truth so that we can discern the error. It's the old idea of that when they used to teach how to spot the counterfeit bills, they wouldn't give them counterfeit bills to look at. What would they give them? The real bills. They would examine the real bill. They would learn everything about the real deal so they could discern when something wasn't right. And that's exactly what we're called upon, to stand in the last days, to know God's word. And then we looked at 1 John. What did we find out from 1 John? What was he telling them in the book? What was he warning them against in 1 John? Okay, the Antichrist is, he said, you know that the Antichrist, what? Is coming. You've heard that. You've heard the Antichrist is coming. He is coming. But he's here already. So why is the Antichrist already here? Why is he here? Right. He is here because, just like that old book by Hollins, he says, Satan is alive and well on planet Earth, right? So he is here, and he's not waiting for the seventh trumpet to blow, right, to get going. He's already here, and he's already working to condition the minds and to pull people away from the Lord and to put this false teaching and his lies. And so he is here, the Antichrist is here, and we are to be what? What does 1 John caution us and tell us? Okay, we're to be on alert. We're to test the spirits, aren't we? He says they have gone out from us. What does that tell you about the Antichrist, some of them? Okay, religious. They maybe were part of the group, and then they have taken that turn, and they've gone away, but they still teach. They think about the false words that come alongside. You know, they still are teaching you that false stuff that's hard to discern. So beware. We are to be on the alert. You know, I think the books of course, the book of, what's the last one there? I can't think of any. What's the last one for Revelation?
Jude.
Yeah, no, it was a J. I think it was Job. Okay. Yeah. Jude, 1st, 2nd John, they're all talking about false teaching. So you think of them to be the last books that are written before the book of Revelation, that this is a trend that started that's going to continue and become stronger and stronger and stronger. You think about when Paul left the Ephesian elders for the last time, remember? They had them all gathered around, they're all crying, so they'd never see him again. And what did he tell them? Yeah, to watch out for the false teachers that were going to be among the flock. And what were they going to be seeking to do? Yeah, they're going to seek to draw people away and to devour them. He says, you as the shepherds, be on the alert. Guard the sheep, you know, guard the sheep. Know the word, guard the sheep. And the way you guard the sheep is to teach the sheep to know the word, right? So this is something that's going to be increasing and increasing as we go along.
When it speaks of the Antichrist being here, that means like his spirit is here. He's a full... These guys, these false teachers, really are a foreshadow or shadowing of what this guy is going to be like, because they are drawing believers away from Christ's message of the gospel.
Yes, and that's exactly what he'll be. Of course, who will he deceive? What is the group he's going to deceive into making a covenant with here?
Israel.
Okay, so it's Israel, right? So he's going to speak the language they relate to. And of course, we know from studying all the books that we studied in the past, what was their inclination when things got bad and they were down and they had trouble, who did they turn to? Yeah, to Egypt, or they had different ones at the time. They would trade their temple goods. They would sell their temple goods over to get protection. So they'd always be giving away things so that someone else would protect them. Who was their protector? God, he was their protector. He said, you're going and you're paying your lovers. You know, that's not how it works. You don't do that. You need to stay with me. I'll protect you. And so the covenant that he's going to make with them in the end is going to show them, in the end, what? Who can they really depend upon? It's God alone. That's what they're going to find out. At the end of all of this time, they're going to find out that the only one they can depend upon is God alone. He is their God, and he'll say, you are my people, and they'll say, you are our God. And so it all is going to fit together for the glory of God in the end, that they're going to fall for it that one last time. He's going to be the one, just like in the book of Zechariah, it says that, you know, the shepherd was struck, he was rejected, but there's going to be another shepherd that's going to come, and they're going to follow after him. And so they're going to look at him in a way that he is perhaps the Messiah. And so he's going to be a very deluded and delusional person, but, you know, they're going to follow right along. So, what do you think? All right, so 1 John tells us that, you know, they might sound good, but to watch ourselves. And they're trying to deceive believers, but believers will overcome, won't they? If we hold fast, we will overcome. We have to know the word. All right, so when he comes... Remember, we saw Daniel's 70th week, and we know that the 70th week will kick in with the covenant with the many. We saw that in Daniel, that when he makes that covenant, that begins the 70th week of Daniel. Now, we know that 7 years, and we know that there's things that go on in the first 3.5 years. What's one of the things that happens in the first 3.5 years that we saw? Do somebody say the witnesses?
Yeah.
Okay, the witnesses. We have the two. I keep wanting to say the 2.5 witnesses. 3.5 years. Okay, we have the two witnesses. And what do the two witnesses do? Okay, they're prophesying. And while they're prophesying, what else are they doing?
Signs.
Okay, all the signs. And as they're doing their signs, they're calling down all the stuff that we've seen in the bowl or the trumpets and all that, the drought and all the different stuff. And so as they're doing all this, of course, people are trying to kill them off, right?
Yeah.
But what happens if they try to kill them?
Fire.
Okay, the fire comes out. They cannot do it. But we see in the 70th, or in the middle of the week here, what's going to happen in heaven? We talked about it before. Okay, there's the war, and who's going to be cast down?
Satan.
Cast down down to the earth. And when he comes down, who is he going to destroy? When he incarnates that man, who is going to be destroyed? Who's going to be killed?
Two witnesses.
Okay, the witnesses are going to be killed, aren't they? Can you imagine what kind of PR that will give him? Because they've been indestructible, and yet here he comes, and he can kill them. So he kills the two witnesses. And then what else does he do when he's thrown down? What's the
sacrifices are stopped.
Okay, because apparently during this time a temple is built. Perhaps the covenant allows them to build the temple, and the sacrifices are going. But in the middle of this week, he's going to stop the sacrifice, and he's going to stop it. And then what? Okay. And then we see all that he ever wanted. You know, we think back to Isaiah. What he really wanted is going to happen. He's going to put himself in the temple, and he is going to say he is now God. With the big G. He's taking the big G. Now, he's the God of this world, little g, but he's taking it over now. He's declaring himself that he is the God. He is God. All right. And so when he declares himself to be God, the abomination, desolation in the temple, what are the children of Israel to do? What are those in Jerusalem to do? Okay, they're to flee Jerusalem, and they flee, the woman flees, away from who?
The dragon.
Okay, she's going to flee the dragon, right? It says that God is going to hide her away for how long?
3.5 years.
And I'm assuming, and I know you should never assume things, but it's those that live in Jerusalem that are fleeing. And so these are the ones that are going to be hidden away, because then he turns his attention to who? To the rest of them, right? He's going to go after the rest of them. Okay, so they flee from the dragon. He then has power over who? What kind of a reign does he have? Okay, it's a worldwide reign, which makes a difference in all the other. You think of the statue. There's no room for the statue here, but take the statue, and they are more of a localized rule. It's big, but they weren't over the whole world. Now, his rule is going to be over the whole world for how long?
3.5 years.
Okay. He is the world leader for 3.5 years. And we know, thinking about the Roman Empire, think what he's going to do, how they, their legs of iron, what did they do? They crushed and they destroyed, and that's going to be the characteristic that he has, because he is part of that. Think about the feet down here. Yeah. He is part of that revived Roman Empire down here. He comes out of this. And so he is going to devour. He's a devourer. He's going to devour and mean, very mean. Okay. All right, so we see that the beast is going to take over for 3.5 years, and then this time, this 3.5 years is called what? We saw it in Matthew, we saw it in Daniel. It's the Great Tribulation. Right. It's the Great Tribulation. So where we might have thought in the past, you've always been taught what? 7 years tribulation, and we could say that this is all part of that period, but the Great Tribulation, the time of Jacob's trouble, is this last 3.5 years. Jeremiah calls it the time of Jacob's trouble. Daniel tells us the time for David's people, or for Daniel's people, like no other. So it's this time here. So who is it primarily focused on?
The
Jewish people, right? But what do we know that during this time, we think of the 144,000 Jews, what are they doing? Okay, they're out preaching the gospel, aren't they? They are preaching, and so we know that during this time, what is there on the earth? We have what's going on with the Jews, but what else do we have? Okay, we have a great revival. We have, it really wasn't called revival because you have to be alive to be revived. But it is a great turning to the Lord, isn't there? We know that because what do we see in the book of Revelation under the altar? Yeah, we see all the martyrs that come out of the tribulation that are killed. They're asking, when are you going to avenge our blood? Because he's the avenger. Just wait till our veils. So there's going to be great, a lot, many turn to Christ. Many saved. And what do we know? Tribulation works what? Everything, right? Isn't tribulation the key, really? It is. You know, we shun tribulation. I remember Wayne Barber saying that lady called him once on the phone and said, I just want you to pray that I'll have patience, Pastor Wayne. he said, all right, let me pray for you right now. And she said, okay. Lord, I pray that you will bring tribulation into this sister's life, that you would give her. Just wait. I didn't ask for that kind of prayer. He said, well, what works patience? It's tribulation that works patience. Tribulation brings everything in our life. So many people, because of this, are going to be saved. Careful what you ask Wayne to pray for, right? Okay. So we see that in Daniel chapter 12, it says that Michael arises. Michael, what's Michael's job?
He's a protector of Israel.
Right. He is Israel's protector. But at this time, he's going to arise. And when he arises, and I told you before, that word means to stand aside. He's not like some people say he rises, he's going to protect them so that some of them make it through. He's been protecting them all these years. You think about the nation of Israel. How is it that they had a nation to bring back into the land in 1948? How could they possibly have? How come they didn't just intermarry and get assimilated by everyone else in the world? They have been protected all these years to come back to the land. They've been protected in the land. They've been protected to be a nation today. So he's going to stand aside, and he's going in tribulation because of the standing aside. It's going to be time of Jacob's trouble like none other before, and that's the great tribulation. Okay, and then let's see, what else do we see in that time? Okay, so what about the second beast? We have the first beast that comes, and what happens? First beast came out of the sea, and we see all those kingdoms, the description of them, so he's embodied all the kingdoms. But what about the second one? Okay, he comes out of the earth, and what does he look like? Yeah, he doesn't have quite the fearsome appearance as the first one. He had his horns like a lamb, but how did he speak?
Like a dragon.
Like a dragon, right. So he might look kind of, you know, innocent, but he speaks like a dragon. It says he exercises all the authority of the first beast in his presence, and he makes everyone to do what? All those earth dwellers, okay, to worship the first beast whose fatal wound was healed. And we don't know how exactly that's going to happen, but somehow there's going to be a fatal wound dealt to the beast, and he's going to recover from it. And because of that, that makes him even more awesome. Not only did he get rid of these witnesses, but he is really just amazing now. And they're going to follow after him. They're going to worship him. And it says that he performs great signs. And so we have the two witnesses, just like with Moses in the book of Exodus, remember? Moses and Aaron were performing all these signs. And then what did Pharaoh's people do? They did the same thing, right? And so we're going to have this kind of a similar thing going on. Sure, they could do this stuff, but we can do it too. They perform all these signs as well, making fire come down out of heaven to the earth in the presence of men. And then he says in verse 14 of chapter 13, what does he do? Okay, he deceives, telling us again who the origin, who the one that is behind these guys, the deceiver, because he deceives those who dwell on the earth. So everyone, all those earth dwellers are all going to be deceived. They're all going to be deceived. And talks about him making an image and causing all the men, great and small, to receive what? The mark of the beast. And so that we know, the mark of the beast, the number of the beast is what? Okay, and that is a number of a man. And so it's a man, even though he represents a kingdom, it is a man that's going to be the one who is the beast. Okay. What else do we need to look at here? Say it comes down, so we don't come up many. Okay, what do we know is the outcome, the end result of this deceiver, this beast, this antichrist and his friend? What is the end of them, for sure? Okay, so they're going to be busy, right? You see all the wars, and I think it's in Daniel chapter 11 that we see all the comings and goings of the beast, and they had a little map to look at there. Let's see, I have trouble getting my thing straight here.
Daniel 7, it's verse 11.
Okay, Daniel 7, we see that the vision that Daniel had, and the Son of Man coming. So he kept looking. He hears, he sees the beast, and he keeps looking until, in verse 11, what happens? In verse 11. Okay, the beast was slain and his body destroyed and given to the burning fire. So he keeps looking and he keeps listening to the boastful words, because does Satan think he's going to end? Do you really think he thinks the beast that he's going to? No. So he looks, the beast is going to be slain. And when is that going to happen? Okay, who's coming at the end? Okay. Jesus is going to come, isn't he? And when is he going to come? What is going to bring him back? Why is he coming to end the tribulation? Well, that's here. But why is Jesus going to come back at this point? Okay, Israel repents, right? Because he's waiting. It says that when the power of the holy people is broken, this time will come to an end. So we know that it's 7 years, and we can calculate the number, but it's because the end really comes because the power of the holy people will be broken, because they have been relying upon themselves and relying upon their own power all this time, haven't they? And the power of their allies. But in the end, they're going to realize that only he can save them. And when that happens, he's going to come back. And when he comes back, what happens to this dragon? The beast, I mean. Okay, because there's going to be a war, isn't there? And we saw this when we looked last time, I think, we looked at the future of Israel, that there's going to be a war when everyone gathers around Israel, and they're led by the beast, and they're going to be, Christ is going to come back with his armies of heaven, which are who? Us, those in the white robes. And when he comes back, he's going to destroy the beast and the false prophet, and they're going to be thrown where? The lake of fire. Are they ever going to be heard from again?
Yes.
The beast and the false prophet?
No.
No. They are gone. Because in the end, they are just what? Men. They are tools of Satan. He is going to inhabit them, and they are tools of Satan, but they are just, in the end, men, and they will be thrown into the lake of fire. All their glory will be stripped away from them, and they will be in the lake of fire.
Every time I read verse 20 of chapter 19, where it says that, they're thrown alive.
Alive.
Alive into the lake of fire.
Well, but it says in Daniel chapter 7 that he kept looking until the beast was slain, and his body was destroyed and given to the burning fire. So how does that work?
Huh? Something's still living.
There
it's
is.
Man.
Yes. The soul, for sure.
But his body isn't.
No. I guess. It says there in text. I don't know. But it's destroyed. And we know that when he's destroyed, it's because when we think of the statue, it says here in Daniel chapter 7, verse 13, I kept looking in the night visions, and behold, with the clouds of heaven, one like a son of man was coming, and he came to the Ancient of Days and was presented before him, and to him was given dominion, glory, and a kingdom. So, well, whose kingdom is he really given? Whose kingdom is turned over to him at this point? Okay, Satan was the god of this world. He is now given rightful heir to the kingdom of the earth, and he is all that all the peoples, nations, and men of every language might serve him. His dominion is an everlasting dominion which will not pass away, and his kingdom is one which will not be destroyed. So it's not just that the evil is rooted out. Who is coming? The rightful heir is coming, isn't he? And he is going to take control, and it's going to be his kingdom as it should have been from the very beginning. The second Adam, it's going to be his kingdom. And so we have the throne set up, the one on the throne, the Son of God, the Son of Man on the throne.
Not just Messiah, but the second Adam.
The second Adam.
Stepping in on our behalf of the human race.
Yep, to redeem what was lost at the fall. It's the complete picture. You know, it's the story. It's the story that is just so fabulous. And so his king, and Daniel was distressed, and he was alarmed by what he was seeing. And then he saw again then the one with the horn waging war, and he says in verse 23 of chapter 7, the fourth beast will be a fourth kingdom on the earth, which will be different from all the other kingdoms and will devour what? The whole earth, and tread it down and crush it. Think of those Roman, the Roman strength, it will crush it. It will crush it. It says in verse 25, he will speak out against the Most High. So think of those blasphemous words always coming out of his mouth. He's one that's blaspheming God. And remember, the people of this world are they're becoming now conditioned to that, aren't they? As we say that marriage is between whoever, as we blaspheme the image of God, as we blaspheme God's laws, as we blaspheme his character, they're going to have it. He's not going to be any different, just more so. So he's going to blaspheme God, and he's going to wear down the saints. Who are the saints of the highest one?
The Jews.
The Jews. Remember, this is Daniel. He's talking about the Jews. The saints of the highest one. He's going to try to make alterations in times and law. So he's going to try to change God's laws, isn't he? Because who's God now? He thinks he's God, doesn't he? He's putting himself in the position of God. So as such, he has the right to change the laws. And they will be given into his hand for how long? Okay. Time and half a times. But the court will sit for judgment in his dominion. Does he have dominion? Will he have dominion? Yes, he does. But it will be taken away and annihilated and destroyed forever. I mean, we should just be singing hallelujahs in our heart, because even though this is a time that's going to be unlike any other this time here, we are experiencing a lot of it now, aren't we? And we know, you know, we look at the world and we go, it's getting worse and worse and worse, and just more and more blatant. He's being more and more bold, putting his agenda out there, isn't he? But we know the day is coming when it's going to be gone. Gone. And isn't it just fabulous? Can we even imagine what it'll be like? We can't. We can't even imagine. Okay, so Daniel was a little alarmed at all that. All right. Then Daniel chapter 9 talks again about the 70 weeks and how we've gone through this. We studied Daniel, and we went through it last time, but how the weeks divide up. But we know that he'll make the firm covenant to start the 70th week going, Tony. And it says that he is the one the people of the prince to come who will destroy Jerusalem. And so where does this prince come from? Who destroyed Jerusalem back in 70 AD? It was Rome, right? So if you connect the dots, you know that that this one who's to come, this prince, is going to be from the Roman Empire. So we know that the Roman Empire is not ruling right now. So there's a lot of it around, but it's going to revive in a way that will be taken over. Yeah.
Are you saying that this is, when you say Rome, is that a figurative Rome, or is that Rome, the city?
We'll get to this later, but I think that Rome is really the center, and we need to look at it, you know, realistically, and yeah, I think there is.
As what was the Holy Roman Empire in Europe many years ago, really from the ancient Roman Empire, a revived new beast in that geographical location
of Europe. Mm-hmm. Yeah. And we know the characteristics of the beast, because we talked about this before. Remember it said in Daniel chapter, whatever we just looked at, that the other beasts, you know, that were allowed to continue on for a while, they'll all be destroyed. And we saw the statue, and we knew that we started off with Babylon, and then Syria, and then Greece, and then Rome, that each one kind of swallowed up the one before them. So they didn't just annihilate them. They all kind of embodied then all the characteristics of all the kingdoms before them. And kind of, so we saw the beast coming out of the water then, in Revelation, he's got the characteristics of all those empires that were before him, doesn't he? And so it's all rolled up into one big fat wad. And we know that when the stone comes, it crushes the feet. What's going to happen? All gone. It's going to be all gone. And so we know that as we're getting closer to the end, why they're working hard, aren't they? Because they don't want to be destroyed. They know the end is coming. They know it's coming, and they're hanging on for dear life. Okay. So his end is destruction, and we need to understand that and not to be fearful. And then we know that it says in Daniel, the kingdom is going to be given over to who? To the saints, right? The kingdom is given to the saints. And we know that this millennial time is particularly a time for who? A time for Israel, isn't it? Because all the promises that God made to Israel all through the Old Testament, all the way through, they're all going to be fulfilled now in this time. This is Israel's time. But what about us? What will we do? We will reign with him, won't we? We think of the whole world being under the dominion and sovereignty of the Lord Jesus Christ as the ruler of the world. His saints will be ruling with him. So what we do on this life that we have here determines what we will do then, doesn't it?
When you led Daniel's study in Daniel 9, which really is a challenging portion of scripture from 24 to 27, we learned that interpreting this text has to be done to divide verse 26 from 27 by about 2,000 plus years. That's the only way it makes sense.
Yeah, we put the big chart up there. So it's the issuing of the decree to restore and rebuild Jerusalem. So that started off the 70 weeks, and that decree came by who? What book did we see that decree?
Was it Cyrus?
No, it was in the book of Nehemiah, right? Nehemiah, remember Nehemiah before the king? Was it Artaxerxes? I don't remember where the king was, but... Yeah, he's up there, and he's got a downcast face, and he's really sad, and he says, what's the matter? Why are you so sad? He says, well, here I am, and my city is in ruins. And he says, can I go back and rebuild the walls? And he says, yeah, go back. So that was the decree to rebuild Jerusalem. It's not the temple, because who gave the decree to rebuild the temple?
Cyrus.
That was Cyrus. You know, God prophesied Cyrus years before that his servant Cyrus would do that. But so it was when they went to rebuild Jerusalem, until Messiah the Prince. Now, what marks the Messiah the Prince advent? Okay, the triumphal entry. When he comes and announces himself as being the Messiah, okay, that day, we call that Palm Sunday, that day that he came to announce the fact that he was indeed the Messiah. So from the day that they rebuilt Jerusalem, there's going to be 7 weeks and then 62 weeks. Now it says it will be built again with plaza and moat, even in times of distress. That's the first 7 weeks when the city was built again. Then after the 62 weeks, the Messiah will be cut off and have nothing. So that's when he's actually crucified, right? And then, so this is after the 62 weeks. All together, 62 weeks. And then at the end of the 62 weeks, after the 62 weeks, this is important, 62 weeks complete, right? After that, what happens? The cross, Messiah is cut off, and what else happens?
Jerusalem is destroyed.
Okay, 70 AD happens, right? So this is after the 62 weeks. Right? After the 69 weeks, right? Because it's 7 weeks plus 62 weeks. But there's that doesn't make right. Right, so we have 1 week left. So it's showing you there is a gap because it's after the completion of those first 69 weeks that these things happen in the first place. And so there is a gap between the 69 weeks and what comes. And then the clock kind of stops ticking, doesn't it? And it begins ticking again when the covenant is made with Israel. It says, then... And he will make a firm covenant with the many for 1 week. So there it goes. There's the 70th week.
And then we had a nice... 26, it backs up what you've been saying. Even to the end, there will be war. And that's 2,000 years ago.
Yep, desolations are determined. Yeah.
Sorry, I think I might have missed it. What verse or verses talk about that Jesus returns and Israel repents? Or is that the
That would be in, well, there's lots of them, actually. Zechariah chapter 12 talks about that a lot, about when he'll come. But when he comes, and when he shows himself to be the Messiah, remember, and they rejected him, he said, you will...